Welcome into Commerce Experience. I'm your host today, Benji Block. On August 24th and 25th, Bloomreach brought together innovators in the technology and retail space to drive the AI discussion forward. There were visionary keynotes and sessions, all focused on this new and emerging application for AI. The Edge Summit shaped a new future for online shopping, from site search to marketing and beyond. I was there at the event in Napa, emceeing the live stream that thousands of leaders from across the globe tuned in for. And if you missed our last episode, I highly suggest you go back, give it a listen. We highlighted the best moments from the keynote speeches at the event from the main stage. Now, today what we're going to do is we're going to bring you some of the best moments from the Bell Suite. What's the Bell Suite? I'm glad you asked. We had the main stage, and then right across the way, we had this dedicated room for conversations, much like a podcast scenario. So we turned the monologue and what was happening on the main stage into more of a dialogue. Extremely insightful, great to be able to have follow-up questions and a good back and forth. And what we want to do today is, over about the next half hour, we're going to bring you the best moments from the Bell Suite, from Napa. So for more content from the Edge Summit, go to theedgesummit.com. In fact, you can watch the live stream from the full 2 days. Highly encourage you to do that if you missed it. But today, here are some of the best moments for you on this episode of Commerce Experience. All right, let's jump in. We have Ali Miller and Raj Dadada. Ali is a top artificial intelligence leader, advisor, and investor with a wealth of experience in the field. She's led multiple global AI initiatives at two of the five largest cloud providers in the world, Amazon and IBM. And with more than a million followers on LinkedIn, Ali is one of the most followed AI influencers in the world. Raj Dadada, co-founder, CEO of Bloomreach. Without further ado, let's go ahead. Let's jump into this exciting conversation.
Raj, I'm so excited to be here with you. And just talking about AI and the generative AI space, you've been early to a lot of trends. And I mean that in a way that is delivering value and actually talking about the customer experience. In addition to being kind of early to this digital first mindset, you've also been hinting at what like the seeker persona could be. And so you spoke this morning in your keynote talking about your couch shopping experience, but I would love to just hear if you could share with us a bit about what that persona of a seeker is and why it's so important.
Well, Ali, it's great to be here with you and great to be with all of you. You know, this idea of the seeker has been at the heart of my thinking and Bloomreach's thinking now going back many years. And really, it came out of an observation that it felt like we were all pretty satisfied searching online for the things that we were doing, but there just was, it didn't feel like it comported with the way human beings actually shopped and actually operated and actually solved problems. And so, you know, I decided that I would go interview a whole bunch of our customers. And so I went and did about 100 interviews with chief merchandising officers, chief digital officers, VPs of e-commerce, CMOs, and just sort of start to ask them what they were doing and track the ones that were being successful from the ones that weren't. And the seeker idea really came out of that. It came out of conversations and realizing that, you know, when someone from a Stitch Fix was thinking about the problem, they weren't just thinking about the dress, they were thinking about the entire fashion experience. When I was talking to the folks at Home Depot, they were talking about building a deck. They weren't talking about selling plywood. You know, even organizations that might have nothing to do with e-commerce, I happen to be involved with the U.S. Tennis Association, and they were talking about the coaching experience. They weren't talking about teaching tennis. And so it just felt like there was something deeper underneath the surface. Yeah. And I came to think of that as the seeker or somebody looking to find a solution to a problem.
I love it. And it's a more holistic view of the whole e-commerce journey. I so infrequently hear about CEOs like really getting into the trenches and meeting one-on-one with customers, let alone 100 customers. What even inspired you to be that type of CEO?
Well, for one thing, I think the hubris of feeling like somehow the CEO job is an all-knowing job or a really important job, I just don't view it that way. I think it is just another job. and we have our role to play. But one of the key roles we have to play is to try to get it right, because thousands of people count on us to make good judgments. And what do you want to do if you want to get it right? Well, you want to collect data. So it doesn't feel like the right way to go about that is to just do and assume you're the smartest person in the room, which I certainly am not, but rather to go out and talk to a lot of those people, synthesize the data, and form a point of view. And that was really the motivation for going out on that exploration.
I love it. And you're always talking about the value of data. And so if you're thinking about this seeker persona and this idea that you now have this ripe set of insights, what do you see as how you are now delivering value to that seeker persona and maybe some new initiatives that you might be working on?
Yeah, you know, I think you raise data, and obviously I'm sure we're going to get to AI, but one of the great things about building a customer-centric experience now is that the data available is vastly different. The inputs are vastly different, right? We used to think of the way by which we would understand our customers as doing focus groups and doing surveys. And now if we think about what we understand about every click and every swipe and every interaction and every voice command, the sheer magnitude of the inputs is vastly different. So now if we think about how do we design customer-centric experience, it's amazing. It's really a matter of whether or not we're willing to listen and then process all of those things and build the methodologies to then create these great, great experiences.
Also, I love how much you're talking about this holistic view of e-commerce, and you're kind of figuring out what it means to even search now. Mm-hmm. So moving into this generative AI space, which again, this whole event is really centered around AI. Obviously, you've been a big leader in the space. So I would love to just hear some early use cases that you're thinking through and maybe what value you're getting out of that.
It's been very much an evolution from machine learning to where we are today with generative AI. And in the early days, when we were building Bloomreach as a search engine for e-commerce, the thought process was I would go and talk to CMOs and VPs of e-commerce and say, imagine if your search engine got better while you were sleeping at night.
The dream.
Right? You know, you don't have to write a lot of rules.
Anything while
you're sleeping at night where progress is being made.
Exactly.
That was the original thesis, was just what we would now call reinforcement learning and being able to take different signals and have that feedback and make the experience better and smarter and smarter and smarter. So from there to where we are today with generative AI and the seeker idea, the thesis is that while the reinforcement learning has been very good at handling these long tail searches where we type in multiple words and plywood for my deck made of this material of, you know, in areas that might have a lot of rain, these very detailed searches, we've gotten actually pretty good at that. And Google and Bloomreach with e-commerce search, we've gotten pretty good with that kind of intent. But the whole seeker persona is, hey, I'm just trying to solve a problem. I'm trying to build a deck. I'm trying to decorate my living room. I'm trying to buy a gift for a friend. And those kinds of things, I just feel like the internet has failed us, that shopping has failed us. And so if we're really going to get to the heart of what people are seeking, we need some new unlocks. And I think Gen AI opens the door to some super exciting possibilities in that regard.
It's almost like you're redefining the problem space. Like we've heard this in the product management world where you're kind of always going problem first, but it sounds like there's about to be this shift in the e-commerce space that's allowing brands and allowing Bloomreach and their customers to start thinking about problem first search and seeking.
That's right. I mean, I believe that's the right analogy. We sort of think of Uber as the analogy. We're about to have just as Uber did for cabs, we're about to have that kind of moment for shopping where we redefine the problem. And the way we redefine the problem is instead of you telling us exactly what you're looking for and us as a shop delivering that to you, which in other words may be called buying or fulfillment, not shopping. Because most of the shopping happens before I translate what's in my mind into 100%. Those four or five word searches. We have the opportunity to play a role in the interactivity throughout the shopping journey, because most things that we buy are not small discretionary purchases. It's not like most of e-commerce is buying staplers online or buying paper or replenishing what I've got. Most of the considered purchases are much deeper than that and much more consequential in the kind of things we really want to think through in our brain. And then over the span of days, weeks, and even months, translate into a search. And maybe now we have an opportunity to play a role in those.
Could you share a bit about maybe your philosophy around how you're building trust into these systems, how you're maintaining trust with your users? You're such a thought leader in this space, and so giving people advice on how to balance these two.
Well, look, I think it starts, one of the key decisions that Bloomreach made was we're going to be focused on incredible experiences. We're not going to be focused on ads and ad-based monetization. And as a result of that, we don't really worry about third-party cookies. We don't really worry about third-party identifiers. We're in the business of generating great experiences because you log in and you want those experiences. And I think that's the core of trust. I feel like a lot of the conversation in data privacy and data trust has been around collection of data. And I think the more interesting question is the responsibility we have around the use of the data. Because to use two examples that are very familiar to us, you know, we all get pretty upset when, you know, to pick on Facebook collects our data and we intended to connect with our friends and they happen to use that data to create random targeted ads for stuff that I wasn't interested in. Because I didn't get on Facebook for that reason. I got on Facebook or Instagram to connect with my friends, not to be targeted to in an unusual way. But on the other hand, we don't get upset at Apple when they collect our data and they generate a route for my route to work, or Spotify when they recommend songs for us. Now, why is that? Because the data use is consistent with my intention. And I think that's the heart of how we at Bloomreach think about the data, which is if we're doing something that betters your life, that's consistent with your intention, then we're doing the right thing. If we're doing something that you think you're coming to us for reason A and I'm monetizing you on reason B, that sucks. That's not trustworthy.
I mean, there's incentive alignment between both of these sides where you're kind of the bridge between the two saying, am I delivering value for you? And am I delivering value for you? And where does that really match up?
That's right. And, you know, so much of internet business models have the wrong set of incentives.
Yeah.
I think what we can be committed to is the right set of incentives, which is sort of like, let's use the data to make experiences better, which will create more loyal shoppers, which will benefit the brands, which will benefit the consumers, and certainly will benefit Bloomreach in that process. That's the triangle that has to work for this all to work.
That is such a fantastic point to end on, the importance of maintaining trust, understanding why someone is actually coming to you in the first place and making that experience that much better. So thank you so much. Really appreciated the chat.
Thanks, Ali. Thanks for being a thought leader in this space.
So next up, Rachel Frederick. She is a strategic digital leader, a customer advocate. She's a trusted advisor with high business acumen, 15 plus years of experience, can help turn ambiguity into a plan of action and helps validate the data. I'm going to hand it over to Ali and Rachel.
Can you share a bit around maybe how you're using AI or even research mechanisms to better understand that non-linear world?
So I think it's a couple of different ways, right? Someone had mentioned earlier today, experiences tend to maybe start through search, right? Customer searching. And we know that. We can see it through our traffic, our PDP, product detail page. Traffic has skyrocketed, right? So we know the importance of your product detail pages today. So we're seeing it through traffic. We're seeing it through the engagement in different ways, different channels, how they're coming in to our site, how they're coming into our store, what's causing that, what's triggering that traffic. And, you know, definitely leveraging a lot of tools. Content Square is something that I've personally used since I don't know, 2017, the customer behavioral analytics. I can see not through clickstream data, but actual behavioral analytics, what that behavior is, what those customer journeys are, and how they're changing. And, you know, again, it's not just online, offline device type. It's all of that plus TikToks and what have you. Yeah.
I really appreciate just how integrated you're imagining this persona to be. And you're kind of thinking about their entire life, right? Or their entire day, and not just the one moment where maybe they're buying something on your page or in your store. Oh. I would love to hear a bit around how you're evolving that into the generative AI space. I know that you're constantly reinventing what you guys are working on, but maybe you can share a few use cases on what you've put into practice. I know you'd mentioned PDP, so maybe something was related to that.
So many places to go with that. So, you know, just a couple of use cases.
Yeah,
I think that are We definitely don't care about the customer journey. Oh, great. She checked out. She bought something from the store online and we're done. Or she took a cooking class and we're done. Did she get the product, the right product? Is she using it? It's so important that we know that they're actually using the product, because that will most likely mean that they're enjoying the product and lower returns or whatever it is, right? So we are definitely looking at it holistically. But some of the use cases that we've done leveraging Gen AI or things that we're also looking into doing, things like we know Wizmo, where's my order calls tend to take up, 45% of call volume with your call center or customer service center, right? That doesn't require a person to answer those questions. So how can we automate that in a way to allow our customer service agents to answer the questions or the calls that do require someone, a human, to answer? So leveraging Gen AI to do human-like chat, so customers are getting those questions answered that way, has really decreased our call volume substantially to allow our customer service agents to focus on customers in a more meaningful way. So it's also decreased the wait time that customers are waiting to get those questions answered or to make a purchase, right? It's not just about answering questions. It's also they want to buy something. So I want them to buy something. So that's one way, that we're already leveraging AI, if you will. Things like being able to show a photo or an image of a product and having the product description written through a chat GPT or something like that, and then allowing the copy editor, copywriter to validate and humanize it is something that we're also doing. And then the reverse of that is actually providing a product description and having the image or the product image created is something that we're assessing, if you will.
Yeah.
Just recently, I needed to have scripts written for videos through, teleprompter.
Not this one. This one is not this improv. One.
This is, yeah, absolutely. although I probably should have. It's okay. Next time. I needed to write many, many scripts for video production. And we wrote the scripts and they were great, right? But they take a long time. And it was generally for, one segment of customer, right? Well, I'll say like the casual cook. I then took those scripts and uploaded them through like a chat GPT and said, give me the same type of script for, professional chef, and multiple cohorts or segments of customers. And what I got back was fantastic, like foundationally fantastic. And then people were just able to riff or improve it off of that. I mean, it just saves so much time, and the velocity of what you can get back is, in my opinion, sets you apart from your competitor, but also really gives the customers more of your attention just to make their experiences better going forward. Because so those are some of those use cases.
I love that. And if they're a casual cook, they don't want to hear the script of the fancy, chefs that have taught in every single Michelin star. I love that. And there's so much of what you just brought up that I'm just going to try and pull out a couple of these nuggets. But the first on that use case of chatbots where you said, hey, 45% of the incoming questions are the where's my order. There was a step that your team took before that, which was figuring out what the data looks like today. And I love that you're talking about this kind of pre-evaluation step before even going into an AI use case. That is such a smart kind of measure twice, cut once. And then the second piece that I would love to kind of dive into more is on the human in the loop. And you kind of mentioned this twice, both a customer support agent might use it, or your copywriter might use this, draft and then cater it, or you might write the first draft and then ChatGPT or something similar might create 20 different versions of it. What role do you see humans, your team maybe playing in this generative AI space?
So, first and foremost, Sur La Table is, owned by Marquis Brands and CSE Generation. CSE Generation as a company is all about acquiring retailers or brands that are maybe in a bad business situation or spot and need to evolve. And they're very much focused on technology and innovation. Gen AI is that innovation. That's the foundation of innovation. So for us, it's been really easy to almost start with it through operational excellence with the lens of the customer, right? All that's important, I'll say equally, but it's really allowing us to identify where the problems, whether it's operationally problems, right? And I think the call center is probably a good example of that, or not a problem, but something we want to maybe improve, efficiency-wise, and how can we do that? And it's almost, I love the thing that I love about CSC and Sir La Table is no idea is too crazy, right? And it's not just the tech teams that you're bringing these ideas to or problems to solve that understand the ability and the unlock through Gen AI. I mean, my legal team and CFO also understand it, right? So it makes those conversations, I think, easier to have at that level. And that's truly what how we are approaching this is understanding where the opportunities are or the problem areas and how can we make it better and faster through, you know, Gen AI and what does that look like?
What sort of tips would you give to folks that are looking for that evolution and have maybe been blocked?
I love thinking outside the box. I just think curiosity and asking the, how can we be better? How can we be faster? Where are our opportunities? And pie in the sky thinking. Like, I love that. Flying cars someday. Like, yeah, yes, put me on that road, right? So I really encourage, if you want to be delivering to your customer what you know that they want and need, and maybe you don't even know what they want to need, but you need to figure it out because your competitors are, right? Mm-hmm. We're all fighting for wallet share right now. And so I think just being smart in your approach and this is such a goosebump moment right now and like where things are and how fast, if you are not thinking this way or this approach is not a part of your conversation, you're going to be too late.
Katie, I'm so glad to be having this conversation. You have one of the more interesting marketing backgrounds. You've worked on the PR side at Weber Shandwick. You've worked on kind of the more adventure and experiences side at Living Social and now at Urban Stems. So I would love to understand, based on all of these different experiences in marketing, what feels new today and what feels like it's different from maybe even 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think the new thing right now is just the ability. At Urban Stems, we are constantly testing our creative all the time and then just constantly iterating. So I think too, and just keeping with the theme of AI, that obviously feels very new in the past year for us, even since like February, I would say. But just thinking through new ideas and new ways in with AI has become a big focus for us at Urban Stems. The other thing too, I think in the past few years is just differentiation. So when we first started at Urban Stems, started about 10 years ago, we were kind of seen as one of the more modern floral gifting companies. Now we're kind of seeing there's a lot of competitors in the space. They're all kind of similar. So this year, we're kind of seeing this as a moment as what makes us different. And so that is why we're looking at AI too, of like, is there something here that we could be tapping into to kind of differentiate us from our competitors? That's a little bit more creative too.
And that battle of competitive advantage, every industry is seeing it. Every company is struggling with it. For the companies that might be watching, what sort of advice have, or what has been working in your field? And maybe what advice would you give to others who are trying to figure out how to experiment in this space and use that as a competitive advantage?
Definitely. I think for us, the big thing that at least made me tap into AI a bit more, and I thought like there could be something here, was back in February, we got reached out to by the New York Times for a story around Valentine's Day. And it was around how at checkout, we have the option to say, why are you sending? And then do you need help writing your note to your recipient? Because we find that like people might pick out the perfect gift and then be like, I don't know what to say here. You know, like, how do I make it heartfelt? We're also keeping it to a certain character limit too. So there's some restraints there. So what we started to do was, hey, let us write a note for you. So if you're sending for a birthday, we'll give you 5 ideas for a birthday note. If you're sending for Valentine's Day, we'll give you 5 ideas for Valentine's Day. So the New York Times saw this, we had a conversation, it got us some press. And then in that conversation, I did say, you know, ChatGPT or AI might be something that we'll look towards doing the notes that way too, of can we have some sort of note generator for our customers? So it really helps them and it really, they can kind of be in control of the note a bit more too. And so that kind of started off this, hey, maybe there's a brand awareness opportunity here, you know, for us to tap into and lean into AI a bit more. Not even like 2 months later, one of our big competitors created a whole AI note generation landing page for Mother's Day. It was very creative. It's very well done. And it got them a ton of press. So I think that kind of kicked it off of like, there is a huge opportunity here. So brand awareness is one of them. It's like what we're thinking through as a company is where are the opportunities there? the one that we're doing constantly now since back in February is just content creation. The big thing being SEO. We will use AI to help us draft any sort of keyword rich SEO content. Typically, we're having to outsource that or having to do it in-house. It's now being able to like free up more time for that person who was doing it in-house to think more outside the box, have more creative ideas, and not be so honed in on like the day-to-day SEO tests. We also are using it to create meta descriptions and then blog content too. And then just overall, we're really leaning into just AI prompts. So we've created an AI prompts library so that we can go in, you like that? We can go in now too and just copy and paste and be like, all right, you know, write me an SEO blurb with this amount of characters about this topic, like what are the best roses to send? And then answer these keyword questions. We also, too, are making sure that in-house we have people who are just signing up for classes, free online classes about SEO and AI, and just starting to kind of immerse themselves into what's possible. And then being able to take that and come back to the table with some other ideas that we might not have even known about yet. So there's been a lot of different ways, and we're seeing some success there, too, especially on the blog side as well.
Something that has felt really like a big theme of today in the space of e-commerce is that you all have so much history of constantly testing. And it's not just A-B, it's A-B times 1,000, where you're used to figuring out what does this look like at scale. And so I love that e-commerce is influencing even other industries about how they might be thinking about testing.
Exactly.
And that transparency piece is so fantastic as well.
Yeah. And I think too, what we're trying to do is even when I say we're writing blog posts and we're using AI, we might also say like, we found it still needs a human touch. Like what it's generating back, it still might not be quite on tone or might not actually be 100% correct. So I think still having that human touch and then still having an expert. So what we've started to do is build our content strategy of, all right, once a week, we'll have an AI dedicated post, we will have an expert related post, and then we can kind of start to see, is the AI content doing better or is the more expert related content? Because Google is saying it's going to value expert opinion and opinions that aren't out there yet. So seeing kind of, and that's something we're testing into too, to see does AI, is it really working or do we start to really rely more on the experts in the field.
Have you gotten answers on that yet?
So not much on the localized content. We saw that that was working. But there has been some posts for our AI related content that is still ranking really well for us, which is great in a way because it, you know, it's not as heavy of a lift, but I think for us to still be seen as a thought leader, we still want customers to be coming to site and saying Urban Stems knows about flowers. They are the experts in the field. So I think it will be, you know, this continuation of testing, but then also kind of still making sure whether it's expert in the field on our blog or maybe it's just in our social content, but still having that human element is going to be very important. The nice thing is, too, I mean, e-commerce is so evolving and fast, as is AI. So to me, if we do find something doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. You know, I think, you know, as long as you're being smart about it and setting these internal parameters of how you're going to use it, you can move on to the next thing. So, and the last thing we've started to kind of experiment with too is AI for horoscopes. So our customers, the number one reason people send. Cancer. the number one reason people send with us is birthdays. So how do we kind of like iterate on that? And we also found that people like when we send emails around horoscopes and why you should send to this person, what it means. So kind of like the frou-frou-iness of it all. So we were like, how can we use AI to work with that? So one thing we've been thinking about is, can we have an AI horoscope generator? So you would say, I'm sending to this person, this is their birthday, give me a horoscope. And then we'd print that on the note card. So just trying again, like brand awareness moments, we don't know if that's going to work. So it's also kind of weighing like, is this worth the lift? That one's like a heavier lift because it requires some tech work and then some ops work too, because it had to print the note card. But it's just all ideas that we're kind of just brainstorming with and then seeing kind of what works.
All right, we are back live from the Bell Suite here in Napa Valley, California. Here is the bio for Brian Lang before we jump in. Co-founder, CRO of Future Commerce, a media and research startup with a worldwide audience covering 39 countries. Future Commerce publishes audio. They publish video and written content weekly to an audience of engaged and highly influential retail executives and operators. For the past 15 years, Brian has focused his career on commerce, enterprise retail strategy, and DTC. So here we go, our conversation with Brian Lang.
I have the privilege of being here with two Brians.
Double Brian.
Double Brians.
Listen, where's your wine?
Everyone has started happy hour early.
Somebody get you some wine.
Listen, yeah. I can wait an hour, okay? More... I have self-control.
This afternoon is going to be way more entertaining.
It's going to be, yes, if you're tuning in now. I don't know about everything else, but this right here is what you didn't want to miss. So today we're going to talk about a lot of the work and research and this kind of thought leadership that Future of Commerce has been pushing out there. I'm a huge fan of newsletters that are hyper niche and focused and help us to think bigger than just like the nuts and bolts of the business. And Future Commerce really like brings this idea of culture, of humanity into this space of commerce. And you and your team write very extensively on this topic. And considering that you've got Cocktails and Conversations, I was publishing The Plug. Like, I think we are again amongst friends here in really helping to articulate and bring down to scope what all of this means and how executives and business leaders can really think about all of these future tools, but apply them with a human lens.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the key. Future Commerce is all about the intersection of culture and commerce. Like you said, that's what we say at the beginning of every podcast now. And the reason we focus on that is because looking out over the commerce landscape, there's a lot of tactical content. There's a lot of heads down content. There's a lot of like, this is how we do retail.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really explain why people are purchasing. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, as people change, so commerce will change. Mm-hmm. And so looking at culture, looking at what's happening in people's minds and in their belief systems and the way that they interact with each other, the relationships, that is what actually drives commerce.
Yeah, it's that emotional connection piece to it.
And I would say, and I know you guys have talked about this, and I've said similar things, which is there's perhaps not a more human activity than commerce.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. This has been a part of who we've been as human beings. Right. Trading, like I have this, you have that.
Yes.
Let's make a trade.
Yes.
Right. And so commerce is fundamental to human behavior.
Yes.
And how we think and how we communicate and how cultures actually interact.
Yeah. And even how we survive.
Yes.
I mean, there's a survival component that we haven't actually talked about, I think, just yet. But when we talk quality of life, when we talk about necessity,
yes,
it's really critical.
100%. In fact, I would go so far as to say that transaction is actually identity exchange.
Interesting.
Mm. Where when you come to someone and you bring your hard-earned dollars or your good that you put all of your effort into, your work, your life's work, and you bring that and you flip sides of that, you're actually saying, I'm going to take this part of my life that I have built, that I care about, and I'm going to hand that over to you, and you're going to give that same thing back to me. And that's why a fair transaction is so important, because actually it's really personal.
Yeah.
It's like the most personal thing. And when you do that, you actually take on a part of that person and part of their work, a part of their
life. Which is so interesting, because actually we've, in the modern economy, and frankly, digital commerce has contributed to this, we sort of dehumanized it to some degree, which is a shame, because it doesn't have to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Transaction's a dirty word. I don't think it should be. Consumer is a dirty word. I actually don't think it should be. Everyone at their very base core is a consumer. We have to consume to live.
Yeah.
That is actually maybe the thing that most defines life is consumption.
Yeah. I love the angle that you approach this, and especially just the way that Future Commerce like really makes you kind of not look at this head on. It's in journalism, we talk about coming in through like the window versus the front door and really like flipping this idea of even as we like step into like AI and the words that we've been using today is like this kind of immersive, generative personalization, but we kind of identify within AI personalization kind of based on, okay, here are your patterns. And so we can match those patterns. But when we talk about humanity, we talk about society, personalization really comes from a really interesting concept of here's how we behave yes. as like actual beings
yes.
throughout evolution.
Right. And you know, when you bring, when you talk about personalization in commerce these days, you know, you may also like, here's a recommendation, blah, blah, blah. Personalization is about relationship.
Yeah.
Right. It's about saying, you know what, you told me these things about yourself, or I know these things about you, and I'm going to tell you, like, here's something that I know from the world that I live in mm-hmm. that might be a part of what I know to be true about you, that mm-hmm. you've shared about me. That's why zero party data is so important.
100%. Yeah. And I've talked about that too, as it relates to personalization. It's like, stop trying to infer everything from data.
Yes.
Ask.
Mm. Yes. Ask. Exactly. And actually this, you're absolutely right. AI is going to play a huge role in this. So we released a report with Bloomreach earlier yeah. this year called Visions. Mm-hmm. This is Visions, actually volume 4. It's our fourth time doing it. And so thank you so much, Bloomreach, for being a part of that. And we covered 4 trends. There's 2 in particular that I think are really relevant to the edge. So one is one you've already started to touch on, this idea of personalization. And we call this trend the multiplayer mm-hmm. brand. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting idea that right now we live in a hyperstitious age. Mm. Hyperstition is this idea that actually the crowd can manifest the future through collective voices. Mm-hmm. And so the multiplayer brand is to say that your Nike is not the same Nike that I have. That's not the same Nike as Brian's. And we need, or we as brands and retailers need to be able to say, wait a minute, we have less control over this narrative we used to. The old way of doing things was command and control. Mm-hmm. Like, here's our brand. Here's our brand line.
Well.
One line. This is our brand. This is who we are. You cannot touch this. But in the new world of commerce, in the hyperstitious age that we live in, brand is actually co-developed and created
yeah.
with the customer.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that allows us to actually engage with them in the story that makes sense to them. And they want to get caught up in our stories too. Like, the people have their identity. Mm-hmm. They have the things that they believe, that they know to be true about themselves.
Yeah.
And they want to play that story, to play a role in other stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So looking to the future, and we've just announced this, we're going to be doing a new property called Muses. Mm-hmm. And it's about taking that identity and bringing it into something else. So the second part of this is another trend which is about the rapidly evolving interaction between humans and machines.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we saw an explosion of change recently with OpenAI launching ChatGPT at the end of last year. And we're not even a year into that. And it's literally on the lips of every single person that I talk to ever.
Yeah.
Like, even people who aren't involved in commerce that are just, you know, they
are technically inclined.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so everybody's talking about it. Everybody's interested in it. And now is the moment where, and this was talked about in the keynote, and I love this moment where Raj talked about how machines have been training us to be like them.
Mm.
We have actually been giving up our humanity in order to leverage the benefits that machines have to offer.
But we had to behave a certain way.
We had to behave a certain way. That's right.
Right.
And what OpenAI has done is, so it's actually changed the language game. And so there's this philosopher named Ludwig Wittgenstein who said that language is inherently limited, and that every relationship is based on language games.
Mm-hmm.
You can only understand the relationship through the language game that is co-created by the two parties or more.
And class and all these things get reinforced through that.
Exactly, exactly. And so actually, yes, every relationship's play, there's a language game that's played. We have been playing a language game with machines.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There is a wild world of machines, of things that we can't even comprehend yet that are available to us, because machines have now moved on the spectrum of like machine communication, human communication, right? We have been trying to speak their language through code and algorithms.
Inputs.
And inputs. And we've all been sitting on the machine side. What OpenAI has done and what generative AI has done is it's actually moved the needle for machines to be able to speak our language, which expands the language game. Mm-hmm. Because it used to be about that big. Yeah. And now it's a much bigger.
That's right.
And so what this allows us to do is extend our minds. So it's actually not some wild world of machine that we're understanding. Mm-hmm. It's actually our own minds that we're extending. Marshall McLuhan, another media theorist, said that all tools are extension of native humanity, right? The wheel is an extension of the foot and allows us to do what our feet wanted us to do all along, or and do more of it, right? Well, AI is actually an extension of the mind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is where things get really exciting. And this is where we see the hyperstitious future start to manifest.
So what I think is so interesting about this line of thinking, right, is it does humanize technology.
Yes.
And if done well, we'll see, right? Because there's going to be downsides, obviously, as well. Yeah. But it does enable and democratize access to technology.
Correct.
And tools. And it allows us, as you said, a whole nother set of interactions are possible.
Yes.
Some of which may not be great. Some of which will be great.
Right.
Right. Like every major human technological invention, we've often seen pros and cons associated with that. Right.
Totally.
Electricity. Amazing. Fantastic. Well, we just saw with Lahaina some downsides.
Yes.
To electricity.
Totally.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. So, you know, that's true, obviously, for almost every major human technological innovation.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. But nonetheless, the opportunity it creates is actually to humanize versus dehumanize.
Correct.
And it's ironic that the conversation that we've been having in the public, you know, discourse, obviously, focuses on dehumanization.
Correct. That's right.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting.
It is. It is, because actually it's going to give us the opportunity to be the most human we've ever been. In fact,
if we take advantage of it.
This book right here is one, if we take advantage of it, that's right. It's by Norbert Wiener, written in 1950. He's the father of cybernetics. You'll notice the title, The Human Use of Human Beings. Mm-hmm. His whole thing was actually AI is going to take care of a lot of low-level decision-making and judgment calls, which allows us to focus on the things that we are really
good at.
The things that we want to do.
Yeah.
But it's going to push our minds beyond where we've ever been before. This is the thing. And he said, we're not going to just sit around. No technology has ever allowed us to just sit around.
Yeah.
Right? Really? That's a bummer.
That's a Roomba.
Roomba.
I never plan on vacuuming again. I'm never vacuuming again.
Exactly. But you know what you're doing instead? You're still working.
Oh, yeah.
You're just working with your brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Machines are unlocking us, giving us, it's pushing all of our creative facilities to the max.
That'll do it for this episode of the Commerce Experience Podcast. If you want more from the Edge Summit, you can visit theedgesummit.com, where you'll find all of these sessions, the full length. You can watch them on demand. Highly encourage you to check it out. That's it. We're wrapping this thing up. And as Brian always says, be safe, be well, and here's to good business.